Here in this year of 991, Olaf Tryggvason came with 93 ships to Folkestone and raided round about it, and then went from there to Sandwich, and so from there to Ipswich, and overran all that, and so to Maldon. And Ealdorman Brithnoth came against them there with his army and fought with them. The Vikings called out, "You must quickly send gold in return for protection, and it is better for you that you should buy off this onslaught of spears with tribute money, than that we should join battle so grievously. We need not destroy each other. If you are sufficiently wealthy, we are prepared to establish a truce in return for gold." To which Brithnoth replied, "Sea Raider, can you hear what this army is saying? They intend to give all of you spears as tribute, deadly points and tried swords, payment in war gear, which will be of no benefit to you in battle. Here stands with his company an earl of unstained reputation, who intends to defend his homeland. You will not gain treasure so easily. Spear and sword must first arbitrate between us the grim game of battle before we pay tribute." The battle went badly, and many so-called English leaders fled as their courage deserted them. Seeing this, Brithwald spoke, shield raised aloft. He was an old loyal retainer and brandished his spear. He boldly commanded the warriors, "Our hearts must grow resolute, our courage more valiant, our spirits must be greater, though our strength grows less." Things change, the more they stay the same. This is a special edition of Shire Network News, the official podcast of the Anglosphere blog, silentrunning.tv. I'm your host, Tom Payne. There will be no blog news this week. I don't want to write it, and you don't want to hear it. There's a time and a place for sarcastic humour, and this is neither. This week, we concentrate entirely on the Islamofascist bombings in London. We all knew something like this was coming, but it's always a shock when you see it happen. Later on, we'll check in with blogger Andrew Ian Dodge with his reaction to the attacks.
When the chips are down, the people you can depend on are the people from the mother country, which is Britain. I mean, there's just no other way around it. All these countries have a similar history in Britain. And it's, as someone posted, don't fuck with our mother. It shouldn't surprise people, even though I think it actually does, that when this sort of thing happens, the Anglosphere countries come together.
Right now, though, because all podcasts are now required by law to contain not less than 5% Lawrence Simon content, here's the Full of Crap Report.
This is Lawrence Simon bringing you the Full of Crap Report on Shire Network News. Crimes against humanity, like the recent bombing of London by Muslim terrorists, bring out the best in people, but they also bring out the crap. Scottish carpetbagger and war criminal George Galloway took time off from counting Saddam's bribe money to condemn Tony Blair for the blasts, blaming Britain's involvement in the Afghan and Iraqi conflicts for making London a target. Never mind that London was a target even before Karl Rove, President Bush, took office, according to various sources like, say, Al Aram Weekly in Egypt, or Al Jerusalem, Al-Quds papers from those peace-loving PLO semi-state-run papers. And speaking of the Palestinians, we've got the stupefying quote from one of their leaders of Hamas condemning the bombing because it attacks civilians in their means of transport. Just look up Hamas and bus bombing to blow that one up, even though Reuters and AFP are spreading the word of that particular blight on humanity around. Immediately after the blast, you could read of false reports of the government of Israel being tipped off before the blast, Israeli Finance Minister Benjamin Netanyahu changing his itinerary at the last moment, George Bush and Tony Blair concocting the whole thing to evoke sympathy for Operation Enduring Freedom Partner Coalition, and so on. We saw this with 9/11, and we're seeing it now. It couldn't have been those peace-loving Muslims in our midst who did this, so it must have been the Jews. All it takes for conspiracy theorists, moonbats, and outright hateful human garbage to get their crap out is to find a reporter looking for a big headline fast, regardless of the real story. A lie is already out the door while the truth is still getting its shoes on. That brings me to Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon himself. That's right, Ariel Sharon. Soon after the blast, he forbade members of his own government from making parallels between London's tragedy and the countless bloody tragedies that have befallen Israel at the hands of Islamic terrorists and the so-called moderates who fund and rationalize such actions. One facet of this war on terrorism is the war of words. the PLO, Hamas, and other Palestinian agencies have been well-trained by their EU and UN counterparts on how to spin events and distribute propaganda and rhetoric to sway world opinion, and the world has apparently bought their lies. Israel once again may be winning the Oslo war on the ground, but it continues to hamstring itself, whether it be its own court system allowing Palestinians to slow down construction of the separation barrier, or Ariel Sharon gagging his own ministers from fighting back in the press. Forget about the truth not getting its shoes on, Sharon's cutting off the truth's legs. But most of all, I believe the worst crap is the whole "we are all fill-in-the-blank" phenomenon when this happens. We were all New Yorkers after 9/11. We were all Madridites after 3/11. We are all Londoners after 7/7. Hey, I'm none of them. I like mustard on my hot dogs, I take baths, and my teeth are clean and straight. You know what we are? You know what we all have in common? You know what bond we all share? We are all infidels in the Muslim extremists' eyes. And they want us, our way of life, and everything we represent, dead. Denial of that simple fact is the worst crap of all. I'm Lawrence Simon, as usual, hip deep in all this crap.
Well, when the bombs went off in London, the blogosphere swung into action. Very wisely, the authorities shut down the entire mobile phone network in case the terrorists were using it to trigger their bombs. But of course, this meant huge communication difficulties. The internet today is a lot more sophisticated and extensive than it was on September the 11th, 2001. Blogs became a useful way to get out information, gossip, vent outrage, post photos and videos taken on mobile phones. It was a remarkable reminder of how new forms of communication are bringing us closer together. Of course, there are also jihadi websites, which are used to post videos of people getting their heads sawn off, so it depends on how you use it, I guess. One of the people who was kept busy live blogging events as they unfolded was Andrew Ian Dodge, whose blog is Dodge Blogium. He's an American who spent more than half of his life in the UK. He echoes almost everyone else who says if the jihadis were trying to induce panic, they picked the wrong people.
Well, I mean, the ultimate irony, I think, is that the bombers, and we have to understand their mentality and how oblivious they are. In Hyde Park, as we speak, there is a living exhibition about the World War II spirit of the British people, specifically about Londoners and about the Blitz. And on Sunday, there's a big remembrance service about the 60th anniversary about the end of World War II. So in the week where we're celebrating the fact that Britain won the war with the U.S. and Australians and New Zealanders, and with a special emphasis on the toughness of Londoners and living through adversity, these people bomb them, as if a reminder to people that they have to be just as strong as their predecessors. I find it ironic, or a sick irony, or whatever you want. British people, I mean, Londoners are very, very determined, I think because it's finally hit home. And not that to a lot of them they weren't affected by, especially 9/11, because London is such an international city, and I don't know anybody who didn't know someone in New York. I mean, honest to God, I did not know anyone living in London that I knew or in Britain that didn't know someone in New York City.
Some people have made the comparison between the reaction of Americans to September the 11th and the reaction of the British to what's just happened here and said that, you know, Americans seemed a little more emotional about it. Is it just a difference in national character?
It's a stiff upper lip thing, yeah. It's just a part of British character. That's not saying anything against, New Yorkers, but a large percentage of the New York population, and I don't mean to insult them, are made up of certain ethnic groups that tend to be a bit more emotional. We forget that sometimes. And the English character adversity is you buckle down and get on with what needs to be done. And that's exactly what people are doing. I mean, there are people riding the tubes today and buses. And they interview them on the BBC and they sort of say, well, were you nervous? And he said, well, you wouldn't be human if you weren't nervous, but we got to get on with it and not let these bastards win.
I saw one interview with a barrister and who had been in one of the train carriages. And they asked him, what do you think of the people who did this? And he said, well, as I'm a barrister, I have to wait for all the evidence to be in before I determine who it is that did it. And I thought that was very British. But then he said, I feel pity for them, which I thought was an interesting reaction. You wouldn't have necessarily got that on September the 11th in the streets of New York.
There is sort of that reaction. And the fascinating thing to me is that I think some of the Muslim organizations, and I think Galloway, are missing a trick. Ken Livingstone, whether you necessarily agree with everything he said, gave a fairly good speech in Singapore. I mean, he's saying, oh, well, they're hitting working class people. You could overanalyze it. I think I may have been guilty of that. Galloway, on the other hand, said, oh, well, this is of course, this is British fault for attacking Iraq, yada, 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 as you would expect.
He more or less suggested that the next time they adjust their aim and get members of the government, that would be fine.
Yes, exactly. I noticed Galloway hasn't appeared on any of the news talking head programs. They went to people like Tony Benn, who sort of said the same thing, but Tony Benn, whether you think he's a knob or not, he is capable of doing it in a, shall we say, slightly more productive way. But, I mean, there are Muslims now whinging, saying, oh, we got a bunch of nasty telephone calls, please protect us. I was amazed that, you know, they didn't even let all the bodies to be recovered before they sort of said, we're already being oppressed.
What about the Princess Dianification of British culture?
I think that's sort of overcome. Yeah, I don't necessarily think that's as common as it was.
Is that because the British people know what's trivial and what's genuine?
I think they do, and a lot of people were, in retrospect, and I mean the ultimate irony, of course, and I saw this for myself, was there was this parade, or whatever you call it, when her body was taken to where she was buried, and there were all these people sitting next to it, reading completely, not understanding the irony, reading The Sun and all the tabloids, which a lot of people were claiming led to her death because they were chasing it. And Major was just sitting there reading The Sun, but wanting to be there. No sense of irony. And I think in light of 9/11 and in light of some of the other things, I think the British people are starting to realize that they became a bit too placid, you know, getting all upset about Diana and things like that. I mean, you know.
But in the response to what's just happened, there aren't piles of teddy bears or lots of candles or flowers.
No, no, there's nothing like that at all.
As an American living in London, how are you finding it? What sort of reactions are you getting?
To a certain extent, I'm an American who lives in London, who uses English expressions and has been here over half my life. And I really don't spend any time around Americans. I mean, people occasionally accuse me of, well, you're anti-American. I said, no, but I live in London because I don't want to live around Americans. Why would I spend time with Americans here? So I don't really know what the reaction of other Americans are, but the reaction of all my British friends is, you know, once we tracked each other down, is exactly what I expected and exactly my reaction. I mean, the guy who's living with me while he prepares his flat and I went out to dinner last night. We're in a highly public place, and we just said, you know, we're not going to change our daily life because of these bastards. What was interesting, I said this on my blog, was there were all these American tourists walking around, and they were sort of shambling like zombies because they didn't know what was going on, because obviously there was no tube and no bus, and they were all stuck where their hotels were and wandering around not knowing what to do, because obviously they came here with an idea of going to see this and going to that, this and this and that. And because they didn't know where it was, they didn't know what to do. And it was bizarre. At 9 o'clock at night, all these Americans wandering around going, what do I do now?
Sounds like zombies, Dawn of the Dead.
Yes, well, except the zombies were faster.
What's going to happen later on, though? It's all very well invoking the 1940s spirit of the Blitz and all that sort of stuff, but there is a media and political class which has been corrosively drip-feeding appeasement to the British people for years now. Are they going to prevail?
I mean, I think you need to read the letters page of the Telegraph today. I mean, there are a couple of appeasing letters. In fact, one which I posted on my blog from, surprise, surprise, a member of the Church of England. But other than that, I think that this will strengthen and resolve, and I think to a certain extent this is the kick up the ass the British public need, and I notice that there are even fewer voices than there were after 9/11 saying, you know, well, what do we expect? We helped in Iraq and yada, yada, yada. There are only a few voices and they're in the usual subject saying that. By the way, much though I don't necessarily like him for a lot of things, Blair's performance yesterday was spot on, and it was very, very impressive indeed.
Well, that was a man whose country had been attacked, and he responded absolutely appropriately, no matter what your politics are.
And exactly, and there are a lot of other people that wouldn't necessarily have responded in such a good way.
It's difficult for people on the right-hand side of politics to really cope with Blair, because there are many things he does politically that people disagree with very, very strongly. But as a war leader, he can't really be faulted.
No, he can't. Besides running on WMDs instead of regime change, but that was, I mean, when he was doing it, I thought it was wrong, and so did a lot of people I know, but anyway. The fascinating thing about Blair when it comes to the right is, he's bringing ID cards, which everybody hates. By the way, the first person to mention that wouldn't ID cards have helped with the situation, was actually a member of the press, and everybody, politicians and police people alike, have not responded in kind to that at all, which I think is very impressive. I was very, very impressed with the press in this country, who at times can be a bit shrill. They were very good yesterday. Doesn't matter whether you're watching Sky or the BBC, and even some of the papers, there seemed to be a sense of maybe they got caught off guard because there've been analysts and bloggers and other people who have been saying it's not a matter of if, it's when. I mean, we all expected this, and fortunately, the death toll looks like it's going to be fairly low.
Is this the UK's September 11th?
Yes. Even though that didn't kill as many, they know how lucky they are. And considering it's such a fundamental part of London life, which is the Tube, I don't know if you've seen some of the pictures. There's some stunning pictures taken with mobile phones, of course, of post-explosion Tube trains with all this smoke and it's dark and it's low light and people are walking out. I mean, that is the fundamental thing that every Londoner depends on is the Tube, and they hit something. And we don't know how many they killed. I mean, they expect it to be under 100, but who knows? But everybody has been on the Tube, almost every Londoner. And to be trapped there after a bomb's gone off with fire is fundamentally, I mean, it's something that fundamentally reaches into the core of every Briton. And the fact that these people didn't warn anybody. I mean, the IRA, you know, obviously we loathe them, but they at least warned people to get the bleep out of there. These people didn't.
And there's no one in the UK who can't identify with being on the London Underground. Everyone's been there. They're saying to themselves, that could be me next time.
That is more important than the fact how many people were killed. The fact that it was the London Underground that was hit.
Tell me how the blogs responded to all this.
Well, I actually wasn't reading very many of them because I was live blogging myself. And to a certain extent, a lot of the bloggers were, well, generally either getting stuck going there, wherever they were, or at work or whatever, and they didn't blog. And the reason I was there on Johnny on the Spot is to a certain extent because I work from home. And I was rather shocked, first of all, to get a call from Tabitha, who I've mentioned on my blog. And then I couldn't get back in touch with her. I went, something's odd here. And then my flatmate rushed into the flat, and I was taking a bath at the time and opened the door, which is, this is very unusual. And I knew something bizarre was going on. And so I just sat down, and I was having people get in touch with me by email that couldn't actually get any information. And I am as well, because we couldn't use our mobile phones, which, in retrospect, is a good thing, because I think that might have
obviously, they
the
shut
bombs.
Down the mobile phone network to avoid any remote detonation.
But they also shut off the normal phone network. So the only means of communication was the Internet. And I am, the difference between 9/11 and now is amazing. I had voice over IP, emails and blogs and everything. The amount of information that you were able to gather and talk to people was amazing this time as opposed to 9/11. I mean, it just wasn't even on the same. You could find out someone sends an email saying, I got into work, I'm here, I'm fine. That's all you need to know. And it's fundamentally, that's the interesting thing. Bloggers, I mean, Harry's Place obviously reacted. He didn't have any comments because he was expecting people to say stupid things. I mean, one reading of my post, someone turned around and said, how do you know it's Islamist? How do you know it's not radical Girl Scouts? By the way, I think the Girl Scouts should be highly offended by that. There are people who are going to say stupid things, and a lot of people shut down their comments for that. But the thing that most amused me, and it shouldn't amuse me, but it did, was a lot of people a couple of bloggers in Australia and in the U.S. were referring to Tim Warstall, because he hosts the Brit Blogger Showcase, saying, he's live blogging it from London. And Tim had to point out to people saying, actually, no, I'm in deepest, darkest Portugal. And I actually had to post on a couple of things and saying, well, if you really want to know what's going on from someone who's, in SW1, come to my blog, because I'm actually sitting here. And then that's why I commented on the things of, normally you have the window open during the day and you hear buses and cars and stuff. And it was silent. I mean, it was absolutely stunning that it was so quiet.
So there was your blog, Dodge Blogium, and, of course, Harry's Place. What were some of the other major Brit blogs?
And Samizdata. One of the Samizdata people who I'm actually, it's very complicated because there's pseudonyms involved. I found out that one of my bandmates was fine from something he posted on Samizdata under a pseudonym. And there were several other people who blogged on Samizdata. But the Samizdata stuff, because most of the people were at work, was more I'm at work, I can't say anything, but I'm all right kind of thing. It was more informational rather than actually discussing it. And it was only until after work and stuff that people started actually discussing it. Harry didn't have any comments. However, we had comments, and so did, what the heck is the name of that site? Europhobia had a comments stream, and as did a couple of other blogs. But, I mean, I think the reaction from British bloggers was so slow, as I said, because people were at work.
So what kind of a role did blogs and comments play for a lot of people?
I think it allowed many people to express their sympathy and outrage to people they knew in the UK. And I think it was a cathartic thing because they could sort of say, you know, we're with you. And if you're sitting here, having people leaving comments saying, this is an outrage, or linking to, or whatever, it's a nice feeling. It let people who read blogs who are in London or British know that people out there from the US and New Zealand and Australia and Canada were with us. You know, they felt our pain at risk of using a Clintonism.
After the September 11th, there was a very touching moment where the Coldstream Guards at the changing of the guard played the Star Spangled Banner. First time it's ever been done. After this, they actually raised the Union flag outside the State Department in Washington again. Has this strengthened the concept of the Anglosphere?
Oh yes, Jim Bennett's Anglosphere. Yes, I think it has. I mean, I think all three governments, no matter what ilk, even Helen Clark in New Zealand, they all realize that when the chips are down, the people you can depend on are the people from the mother country, which is Britain. I mean, there's just no other way around it. This is not like we're talking about something that's a difficult concept to grasp. All these countries have a similar history in Britain, and it's, as someone posted, "Don't fuck with our mother." I think it was on Dean's World, and it's a picture of the British flag. Basically, that's what it means. It shouldn't surprise people, even though I think it actually does, that when this sort of thing happens, the Anglosphere countries come together. You know, there's no unquestioning. It's they come together as a family of nations.
And blogs are playing a role in that, aren't they?
Oh, yes, they are. I mean, I think to a certain extent, blogs reacted faster than some of the mainstream media. Fox's reaction when it actually happened was a bit tenuous at first. I was talking to Frank Sensenbrenner, which is Jim Sensenbrenner's son, Representative Jim Sensenbrenner's son, who's a friend of mine. And he said Fox had, you know, sort of said, well, there are reports of some problems on the tube. And it was only until much later that Fox reacted and said, oh my God, look at what's going on. But blogs, I think, reacted almost immediately. People were getting up and they were seeing these reports and they were blogging. I mean, Silent Running certainly did. Tim Blair certainly did. And they actually linked the people in Britain. They tried to, or at least in this continent, to get reports because we have this almost cynicism about the mainstream media, where they have an agenda and they have things they report on and they have to catch up. But bloggers say, okay, right, there's been a terrorist attack in London, we want to know more. It's naturally what we do as bloggers. So the immediacy, we were right on it as really, really quickly, and that's very impressive. I also think it showed that there's a certain core group of Anglosphere bloggers, and I don't want to leave anybody out, but you know who we are. My blog, hopefully being one of them, Sama's Daughter, Silent Running, Dean's World, On the Third Hand, Cold Fury Mike, those blogs that were all this sort of interconnected network all over the world. And we all linked to each other. And, I mean, if you wanted information on what was going on in London, you could find out what was going on by hitting one of these sites. And they would lead you on to where you need to go. And you must remember, and I think you realize this, that the Sky site, Sky News, and the BBC News site was down until about 6 o'clock last night. You couldn't get any information on it. Reuters was down. It was crushed. And the American news sites were just sort of like, they didn't know what the heck was going on.
Well, Andrew, let's not end on a negative note. Let's respond with typical London phlegmatic stoicism. Let's talk about something a bit more cheerful. Your band is about to release a single. Tell us a little bit about that.
On the one dark moment, I actually had to speak to several of my friends in the music business. I said, okay, we've had this bomb on Thursday. I was thinking of we're thinking of releasing it on Monday, Tuesday to the proper people. Do you think that's enough time? I first have to explain the song. It's almost a pastiche of my time in Westminster, because I've been a political hack on and off, and I you know, sort of talk about the things that politicians occasionally get up to, getting drunk and going off in Hampstead Heath and you know, discovering a certain part of their personality and all these various other things. It's not slagging politicians off. I try to, it's almost more human, because I always find it really annoying when people sort of say, oh, politicians, aren't they all terribly awful? And I said, well, okay, take 650 of your average people with a similar income and stick them in a room, and I bet you'll find a higher percentage of people that are divorced, you know, probably a higher percentage of people with a criminal past, with all these other things. And I actually feel sorry for politicians, because most of them are actually really hard-working people who are trying to do the best for their constituents. And we only hear about the complete tossers.
And they're going to be working even harder from now on, that's for sure.
Exactly. And the single we're releasing is actually a targeted single, and it's already been sort of picked up by a guy on Channel 4 who wants to run it, who likes it. And it's basically a song called Whiskey in Westminster, which I've sent to you. And it's a loving tribute to silly politicians.
Well, let's have a listen to the song, Whiskey in Westminster, from Growing Old Disgracefully.
They're just like you and me, trying for a chance to break free. All is something to hope for, after where life ain't such a bore. They all have a place they want to go, somewhere they think that they're not known. Highlands or Hampstead, or whiskey taken straight at me. Just whiskey in Westminster. Two things that go together. Just whiskey in Westminster. Like London and Mayfair. Politicians and journals getting pissed. Trying to get out of some shit. All of something they can't grasp. Trying to live up the glories of the past. All they need is a bit of fun. Sick of living life on the run. Waiting for that summer break. At a time when nothing is at stake. Just whiskey in Westminster. Two things that go together. Just whiskey in Westminster. It's a village, so they said. They're just living day to day. Everyone knows what is what. No ifs, ands, or buts.